Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, September 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. One guest today, that is Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat with him here in a couple of minutes. Before we get into that, a couple of things I want to mention. Over at BangTheBook.com, we're rolling out NHL team previews now. Parker Michael's coming up with those. You can follow him on Twitter, at Creature, K-R-E-A-T-T-U-R-E. Really in-depth, really detailed stuff. The first three have been posted. Actually, yeah, the first three have been posted. The Boston Bruins, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Detroit Red Wings. I've got the Florida Panthers to post here later today. But a great introduction to the NHL season. We're going to have him as we go throughout here. He's going to do some pick stuff, some futures stuff, division futures, award winners, stuff like that. So it's going to be a really, really good season of hockey content over there at bangthebook.com. We also posted Danny Vorg's week two NFL power ratings coming out of a 5-0 week last week with the plays that his numbers suggested. So please head over to bangthebook.com and check that out. Tons of game previews. I've got my college football updated power ratings up. We just got great stuff going on over there. Those contests where you can win cash prizes. So much going on at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Also, don't forget about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. You get a $25 free bet just for signing up with the promo code BTB and the number 25. Once you decide to deposit over there, and believe me, you will, because you're going to be impressed with the interface, with the live betting site, and all the other things that DSI has available to its clients. You'll get a 100% deposit match bonus upon that first deposit. And if you decide to play at the live casino as well, 100% deposit match bonus over there also. So a couple of good offers there from DSI Sportsbook. Again, as I mentioned before, a low rollover on that bonus, which is a very, very important thing for those that want to be able to get access to their funds as quickly as possible. So we've talked about it here throughout the season. They're an independent book now. You can get lines that they're going to have that other books aren't going to have, and shopping around for the best prices. Critically important here throughout all markets, but especially when it comes to college football and the NFL. One segment, or one guest, I should say, here on today's Wednesday edition of the show, that is with Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, bud?
It's going great. Glad to be back again.
Well, glad to have you back on the show here. We've got tons of things to talk about. I know I sent you over a couple of questions from one of our listeners, and then also a listener request on a game. Before we get into that stuff, let's talk in general here. College football, week three. We talk about week one to week two being full of overreactions. Seeing a lot of those out there in the marketplace here this week as well.
Yeah, it is. And we just had the Tuesday meeting yesterday, and Cheetah was there. And it seems like a lot of us were on the same games because of that overreaction. And it's an interesting story, and it just tells you how it works for most people. We're at the Tuesday meeting, and we're watching ESPN, one of their shows, and they were making the NFL rankings from one to last. And in 1 week, they had moved Jacksonville, I believe, down up 10 and Houston down 12 in 1 week in their power ratings and power rankings, actually, when in reality, most people probably did not move the lines on either one of those teams, or at the most, they moved them 1 point. And it just shows you why we are able to profit off of this. And for example, for the NFL this week, there's overreactions. There was overreactions last week. Some were good real overreactions. Some, okay, we learned something from them. But when you only have a small sample size of one or two, obviously the variance is going to be much higher than it will be at the end of the season. You know, that's why I like to play baseball, season wins. You got 162 games. At the end of the season, you know who the best teams are. Even in football, when you've only got 12 in college and 16 in the NFL, there's teams like last year, USC was one of those teams who just came on late at the year, but they'd only played 12 games, and then by losing early, they knocked them out. When you play 82 in the NBA, you play 162 in Major League Baseball, you're pretty sure once the playoffs come, you've got the best teams.
Well, that's a very important point to make is, you know, don't listen to those mainstream media networks here about everything that's going on in college football and the NFL, because it is a what have you done for me lately type of news cycle that we have now 24/7, 365. You've got instant knee-jerk reaction on Twitter. I mean, just from watching it with the Cleveland sports people that I follow, people were panicking about the Indians early on in the year. They were hovering around 500. They had given up the division lead to Minnesota. Kansas City was right there. I mean, now all of a sudden the Indians are going to win this division by probably something close to 15 games. And, you know, when you talk about sports, when you talk about betting, when you talk about understanding games and statistics, it's a sample size thing like you were just talking about. And a lot of times these shows that are out there or these forms of social media that are out there are not equipped for the fact that seasons take a long time to play. Everybody wants to throw out their hot take. Everybody wants to be the team that, or be the guy that can say, yeah, see, we moved up Jacksonville and we were right about Jacksonville because they're 3-0 now. You know, everyone just wants to have those bragging rights, and you really don't want to be influenced by that kind of bias because it's just going to lead you in the wrong direction.
Definitely. I made fun of sport. I think it was Sports Illustrated a few years ago. Philadelphia 76ers started the season 3-0, and they moved them from the worst team to the best team. And I said, I will give you an over-under of 20 wins on the entire season that they don't win any more than that. And it's ridiculous. It's you do all your preparation work, and then you throw it all away based on a small sample size. That's what gets people in trouble. That's why Vegas is here and makes money, because people overreact. And, you know, even the people that should know better, the people in the sports industry, they don't. In fact, I saw a tweet today that, you know, one of the talking heads on ESPN said that the New England Patriots probably don't deserve to be a top 10 team in the NFL. So it's, you know, half the time they're just out there trying to cause trouble and get people to argue with each other. And ESPN could be so much better if they actually took legitimate sports talk as opposed to just trying to be as outrageous as they possibly can. And unfortunately, there's people that watch that kind of stuff and start to believe in it. But it gives us better lines to bet into because some of those people back up their opinions with money. And if everybody was as diligent as we are and the people in the industry here, we wouldn't have the edges that we do.
All right, well, let's look at a few of these games here, and we're going to sound like a little bit of a broken record because we talked about some of these with Cheetah on yesterday's show and then, of course, touched on them with Kyle Hunter on Monday's show as well. But there are two games with classic overreaction signatures that really, really stand out here this week. The problem is that they are two very difficult underdog bets to make. They are Pitt and Baylor. And, you know, I mean, this is one of those situations where if you look at a Baylor-Duke line from before the season, it is nowhere close to two touchdowns. In fact, I'm going to try and bring it up because I did write a Duke season win total piece here earlier on over the summer. But, you know, look, I get it. You know, I understand why these lines are moving the way that they are. I understand why these lines were put out the way that they are. But again, if you're out here looking for opportunities to make money in the sports betting industry, you have to be able to recognize these things. These numbers are just too big.
Yeah, they are. And you could probably throw in the BYU-Wisconsin game in that same sentence there. Yeah, I actually looked today because I talked about that. I said, how bad? I made a 7-point adjustment on Baylor after 2 weeks, and that's about as most as I've ever made. I think by the end of the year, Baylor's going to be a big moneymaker, number one. I like their coach. There's a definite upside in their coach. The coach is better than the coach they had last year. And number two, as the season goes on, these players will start to learn how to play that kind of system as opposed to what they were recruited for. And so once the Big 12 starts playing teams that play a different type of ball, like a Kansas State usually is a little bit different. They don't throw it around like most of the teams in the Big 12. They have advantages. And that's one of the things we talked about. And I looked at the beginning of the year. I had basically Northwestern and Baylor in the same point range, within a half a point. So I looked at what my lines would be right now with Northwestern, and I've actually dropped Northwestern a couple points along with Duke, with the Duke game. And I had Duke being a 1.5-point favorite. Here we are catching a whole lot more there. So at the beginning of the year, just 2 weeks ago, it would have probably been like a pick'em between Baylor and Duke. And now after 2 weeks, we're looking at the crazy number that's out there right now.
Yeah, it actually kind of pisses me off because I was sitting there looking to pick off bet online openers as I'm walking around Target doing the good husband thing on Sunday. And the Baylor number comes out. It's around like 9.5, 10. And my number on this game, even still with the big adjustment I've made with Baylor, is in the 4, 4.5 range. So I thought, okay, I know this is a tough bet to make, but I think that I can, you know, reasonably assume that this number is probably going to close somewhere around 7, maybe 6.5. I think I'll get some line value here. And then all of a sudden it starts going the other way. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I probably under-adjusted Baylor. I fully understand that. They've looked bad for 2 weeks. Maybe I didn't give Duke enough credit for Northwestern. All right, fine. It's going to close 11, 11.5, something like that. There are 14.5s out there in the market. So obviously I'm not happy with the opener that I got from Bet Online, and I'm hoping that, you know, Baylor actually plays a lot better than this line would indicate. But still, I never in my wildest dreams would have imagined this number would be more than 2 touchdowns at this point. Baylor by 40, I'm not the least bit surprised, just because of the way that Baylor looks here so far, and Duke certainly looks better than we expected. But still, this is one of those lines where, you know, I likened it to taking a double-digit dog in the NFL, where you hate doing it, but sometimes you just got to do it.
Yeah, it's the lines are out there for a reason. And when all the money came in on Baylor after that, it's because there was a lot of money on Baylor right before kickoff last week, or against Baylor, and it was right money. And so the books are quick to move on that, thinking that somebody knows more than they do in it. So that's why you see the Baylor line go up. I made the line 10. And like I said, I made a 7-point differential there. In the Duke-Northwestern game that they played, I discounted Northwestern more than I added to Duke. So I thought it was more of a situation that maybe Northwestern was overrated coming into the season, because we haven't seen anything out of them that would say that they're a contending team or a team that looks to be going to a bowl at this point. So, yeah, I made a 10, line's 14. I'm in no hurry to jump on it. I think people are going to continue to take a look at what Duke did last week in a one-game sample, as opposed to, you know, what Baylor has done. And there'll be advantages there. And, yeah, the three games that you had mentioned, all my power ratings were saying you've got to play this team.
Well, and again, I mean, I'm going to use this Baylor-Duke game as a learning experience, because, you know, I didn't adjust aggressively enough. Maybe I wasn't high enough on Duke at the start of the year. That's probably the thing that really stands out here, because in my season win total preview, I only had Duke favored in one game, and it was against Army on the road. So I was probably too low on Duke to begin with. I had them with about 4.7 wins. So, you know, maybe I needed to be a little bit more aggressive with Duke. And that is something that I will look to do as I go forward here into next week, is make an adjustment up on them and probably another adjustment down on Baylor, just because, you know, that's certainly how the market looks to be right now. But it's an important thing for our listeners, and also to acknowledge the fact that, you know, you were wrong. I mean, I like to think that I've got a fairly good grasp on the markets, particularly the college football market. I'm glad I'm doing power ratings here this year, but there's still a learning curve that goes on with this, because, you know, I talked with Cheeto about it. He said it probably took him, you know, 5-6 years to put together power ratings that he felt really confident in, you know, at the start of a season, and then felt confident in making the adjustments as well. So, you know, I'm certainly a novice when it comes to that. And, you know, if you can acknowledge the fact that, you know, you were wrong and learn something from it and improve and make adjustments a little bit quicker in following years, that's really the end game here and the goal of what we try to do with this show as well.
Yeah, that's definite. I mean, you were one of the first people to turn me on to analytics, and I've always admired the guys that were ahead of the curve in something like that. So I could listen to the guys that have been in business for 40 years, 50 years, and do the same things now as they've done in the past, because it used to work in the past. And I could tell you they're going to lose money when they're betting on these games. They're not going to have a winning record. I'd like to listen to you, Warren Sharp, a lot of other guys that are into the analytics, because it's something that is brand new. And even though, like, I don't believe in a lot of things people do, I always like to get their opinion on it. I've always said, if you can get a guy who's a personnel guy, along with a guy who's a situational guy, a guy that's really good on angles, an analytical guy, all these guys together looking at things from a different standpoint and coming to the same conclusions, that is what I want. And I just had something happen, you know, last week at the Tuesday meeting. One of the guys came in, and he's an NFL guy. And he says, well, myself and the other guy that I bounced the things off of in the NFL, we always agree to the same teams, which is why we like to play the NFL. And you guys in college are against each other in a lot of games. And I said, that's the whole point of it. It's in the NFL, sure, New England's a better team than Jacksonville, and they're going to beat Jacksonville 9 out of 10 times. In college football, you have different things going on. You have teams trying to do something different in each and every game. Everybody has a different opinion on the game. I get so much more from people disagreeing with me than I get from being a yes man. And a guy say, yep, that's what I got. That's exactly the same thing as I was thinking. I like to hear somebody say, did you know this was going on? For example, and I know we may be talking about this a little bit later, but that Oregon State game, the Oregon State game on this week's slate against Washington State. My numbers say Washington State is overrated in this game. The line's too high. Last week I liked Boise against them. It worked out. I just didn't get the outright win. But the line is like 10 points higher than what I thought it should be. And then I find out that Cheetah comes to the meeting. He says, did you know the two Oregon defensive backs, their two best two defensive backs, are not playing? Well, the last thing you want to do is bet on an Oregon State team without their best two defensive backs against a team like Washington State, who throws the ball up and down the field all day long. So I said, okay, I still like my number on this game, but I'm going to read a lot more about it before I make a decision on it. So just having a personnel guy there was able to help out, possibly save me a bet. We will see. But it's good to have different guys who specialize in a different thing get together, and that's how you end up winning.
No, that's a great point on that Oregon State-Washington State game. We will circle back to that one here at the end because I know a listener had a request for us to talk a little bit more about that game. I want to talk about this Tulsa-Toledo game, and I want to do so with a listener question. I've actually had some really good discussions here over the last couple of days with @BrashLimburg in DM on Twitter, and I'm going to talk about that by myself a little bit later on in the show as well. But here was the question that he had. So we've been talking a little bit here about this Tulsa-Toledo game, and a lot of people probably have these teams rated pretty evenly, with Toledo getting, you know, 3 or so for home field advantage. Well, the line out there in the market's 9.5 or 10 right now. So one of the things that we were talking about is how, you know, a lot of times you have to adjust your spread based on the projected total. So in a situation like this where you've got a game that's got a total in the mid-70s, you know, if your power rating line is 3.5 or 4 or 4.5 on Toledo, with a 73-74 point total, you're probably going to bump that number up to 6, maybe 7, something like that. You're going to make some adjustments because it's going to be a higher variance game with more scoring. So, Brian, is that something that you do when you get a high total? You know, are you looking to adjust your number up a couple points? And then similarly, if you get a low total, are you looking to adjust the underdog down a couple of points?
Yes, exactly what I do. When I do my power rating at the beginning of the year, for example, I think last year the average point scored in college football was 58 points. So I base my power ratings based on a game in which the average total is going to be 58 points, because at the beginning of the season, you don't know what the totals are going to be in a game. But the reason you have the higher totals is because they expect to have more plays in the game. If you have a lower total, chances are you're going to have less plays in the game. For anybody who bets the NBA knows exactly that. You cannot take an average of a Golden State against another team and figure out their average plays in the game, average shots in the game, average possessions in the game. You can do that, but it's a lazy way to do it. You know that Golden State's going to push the tempo, and Golden State's the better team. So you have to, assuming that Golden State is going to be the team that directs the tempo, and you have to make your adjustments that way. For example, my number in this Tulsa-Toledo game, if the line was 58, it'd be a little bit lower, but with the adjustment, or make it a 68, so you're looking at basically a 1.5 point, 2 point adjustment in the line. I made it 7.5. It's still a little bit short of what the current number is at 9.5. But when you take a look at the teams that they have played, Tulsa's played Oklahoma State, got crushed by 35. They played Louisiana and won that game by 24. So really, they haven't impressed overall. Louisiana's not a very good team in that league. So Toledo had went on the road against Nevada. Well, Nevada went to Northwestern and plays very well at Northwestern. I actually think, based on the teams that we have seen and out of these grouping, I think Nevada is probably the most improved out of all four of these teams that we have seen, all six of these teams or whatever. So I think that Toledo is legitimate, even though my number says 7.5. I could see it up at 9.5. Toledo goes into Nevada and, you know, only wins 37-24. You take a look at the first half, they were only winning 20-10, outgaining them by only 0.4 yards per play. Explosive plays, Nevada had 4, Toledo only had 3. Toledo usually has a lot of explosive plays. They've got a dangerous offense. So, you know, based on that, I can see where it is. But you definitely have to adjust based on how many points are going to be scored in the game. And that's one of the reasons in that Wisconsin-BYU game. It's going to be tough for Wisconsin to lay that type of number because there's not going to be many points scored in that game.
Well, this listener in particular went on to say, you know, it would seem that it would just make sense to avoid games with high totals anyway, because we talk about a lot of variance. You know, there will be a lot of plays in this game. There's no question about that. And in looking at this game, and I did write a preview for this game over at bangthebook.com, my number is actually 3.5, but I was very high on Tulsa coming into the year. I think Toledo's still a good team, but I'm not in love with the spot coming off of a high-altitude game in Reno. You know, there's kind of a little bit of a – not a letdown factor necessarily, but just the idea that they went out and traveled much further than they usually do, pretty much lost a day, 2 days of practice coming back. You know, so I think Toledo's in a little bit of a tricky spot here, so I do shade the number a little bit in Tulsa's favor because of that. But I also understand the fact that Toledo has a much better defense than Tulsa. Tulsa gave up 42 points to Louisiana Lafayette. Louisiana Lafayette's not a great offense, and that was a game played at a very high tempo. So another thing that I'm kind of factoring into this line and why it may be the way that it is, you used this example with the NBA a couple seconds ago. You talk about number of possessions. Golden State has an edge over whoever they're playing on every single possession. And when you start having more possessions, that creates an even bigger edge for Golden State in that game. Similarly, in a spot like this, this is going to be a game with a lot of drives, a lot of possessions, a lot of plays, but Toledo's defense is much better than Tulsa's. So on every possession, offensively and defensively, Toledo's getting that much more of an edge overall in the game, right?
That's exactly right. And just looking at Tulsa's game so far, and as I mentioned in the past, I only chart the first halves of the games. That's when both teams are basically trying to win the game. Tulsa allowed 12.6 yards per play against Oklahoma State and against Louisiana 7.3. When you have teams that are the better teams, they're going to control the pace of the game for the most part. You're going to get a wider display of where it's going to end up. For example, I play a lot of first inning Major League Baseball, and let's say Cleveland is playing at home and they're a 170 favorite in the game. They won't be a 170 favorite in the first inning. They will be maybe a 130 favorite, and that's because they're the better team, but it's only one of nine, 8.5 sometimes, one of only nine entries. And so as the game goes on, you're going to find an inning where the visitor is going to outscore the Indians 2-0 or 1-0 or 3-1 or something. But in the long run, when you've got the entire 27 outs in a game, Cleveland is the better team. Cleveland is the better team on the season. And so that's why I like to play seasonal wins in baseball, because it evens out a little bit more. But in the first inning, they know that if Cleveland's a 170 favorite in the entire game, they're not a 170 favorite in that one inning, because there's going to be two or three innings in that game where the opposition could win that inning 1-0. So they have to lower it, and it's based on a smaller sample size. And that's exactly what it is here for totals. It's a smaller sample size when you are not having as many plays, when both teams are going into the game and they're going to run the football. There's less a chance for a blowout situation, as opposed to when you get two teams out there going as fast as they can, and you could see more of a blowout situation because of that. And you get a lot of backdoor touchdowns at the end because the team is going to continue to pass the football. What you get in a low-scoring game is the teams that are in low-scoring games don't have the ability to pass the football. So when Boston College is down 14-0 at the half, they don't have that ability to come back. All they have to do is try to shut down the opposition defensively and hope that they could score a couple touchdowns on the ground, because they don't have that passing ability at this point.
All right, so one of the follow-up questions here, and I think this is a really good question and something that is good to bring up here on the show as we're talking about this thing. You mentioned that BYU-Wisconsin game. Now, obviously, the situation a little bit different now for BYU with the fact that Tanner Mangum not going to play and he's out 4 to 6 weeks. But, you know, as the listener sort of postulated here, you know, maybe I should just avoid high total games altogether because of the amount of variance. He says, if you're looking at a low-score, lower-variance game like BYU and Wisconsin, does that merit a larger bet? Because, you know, you do have you're getting plus 17 in a game with a total of 41. So theoretically speaking, BYU should cover more often in a spot like that than Toledo will, say, you know, in a 9.5 spread game with a total in the mid 70s. So is that something you would look to do? Maybe increase your bet size in a spot where there's expected to be less variance?
I don't, because I figure my numbers are as good or better than the bookmaker's number, especially if I'm betting early in the week when the lines don't settle in. I did make an adjustment there. I only make Wisconsin 9.5 in that contest. And part of the reason is because it's a road game. Excuse me, it's going to be a low-scoring game. And I'm taking a look at that game right now. Number 153-154. So the current line on that game right now is 17-41. So basically, they're telling you that BYU is not going to score much at all. 29 to 12 is basically what they're trying to say. 29-12 in that game. I make the line 9, which means that I think Wisconsin's going to score less. You're taking a Wisconsin team. Number one, they rarely travel. The Big Ten rarely travels west of the Mississippi. They're going to BYU here. They just played two cupcakes in Utah State and Florida Atlantic. But when you take a look at the first half of those games, when both teams are trying to stay in their regular, the way they try to play the game, don't throw the ball out because they're trying to make a big comeback. In the game against Utah State, Wisconsin was outgained in the first half, 3.9 to 3.0, halftime 10 to 10. Against Florida Atlantic, they only outgained them by 1.8 yards per play, and they only led by 10 at the half. Both games, Wisconsin struggled to move the ball against those teams. They did have 7.8 against Florida Atlantic in the first half, but as we saw the week before, Florida Atlantic's not a very good team. You've got a Wisconsin team traveling all the way to BYU in altitude, a BYU team who nobody wants any part of right now. The general guy who's going to the window, he is not going to be playing BYU. He is not going to be playing any of these teams that have looked bad so far. He wants to play the teams that have won for him in the past. So we got tremendous value on Wisconsin. Like I said, I made it 9 with the game being low scoring. It's like I said, normally you're getting a 58 and now you're getting a 41. It's 17 points less than what a normal scoring game is, which is why I dropped it down to 9. I do like the BYU side. I think that's the only way you could play it. I see a 17.5 at an offshore right now out there on that. It's going to be a battle. That one will be a battle of the public or against the wise guys. And, you know, just because the line moves early in the week does not mean people like that game. It means that they know which side the public will be coming in on, and they could bet $1,000, $500, move that line up, and then come back game day and bet $10,000, $20,000 on the side that they want. So just because a line moves early on does not mean it's the move that means that that's the right side in the game.
All right, well, let's get to that 173-174 game on the rotation number. Oregon State and Washington State. This number now up to 21. This is a number that's been moving steadily throughout the week. It actually hit 21.5, 22 at one point, but it's come back down. Now, the opener on this one was 15.5. I think my number is 14.5. So I was right there on the opening number, but you know, as you just mentioned there, and Cheetah, you know, bringing that to light, that Oregon State down two corners facing an air raid offense. Luke Falk expected to play here, but Tyler Holinsky looked pretty good last week in that comeback win against Boise State. So, you know, this is kind of an interesting situation because you've got an Oregon State team that's not going to run a ton of plays. They're going to want to try and slow this game down, try to wear Washington State down with the rushing attack. Washington State's going to do what they do, and they do it very, very well. How do you handle this game, Brian? Because like you said, from a power rating standpoint, you've got some value on Oregon State. There's no question about that. But not having two key corners is a big deal from a matchup standpoint.
Yeah. One of the things I always take a look at is what the lines were the last few years between these schools. Between the three of them, the last three meetings, the highest line was 8.5. And that was when Washington State was an underdog. The last 2 years, it was 7-point favorites for Washington State in both those matchups. So now we're seeing a game with a line of 21 in a series for the last 3 years that have been more closely matched. And I don't think, you know, why I like Washington State, but take a look at what they did against Boise. First half in that game, they were outgained 5.2 to 4.9. Turned the ball, they were out the turnovers were exactly the same in the first half. Washington State, by the looks of starting field position in that first half, they had a drive started at the 7-yard line of Boise State. They had another drive started at the 47 of Boise State. So they had two drives starting in Boise State territory, and yet they only scored 10 points in that first half. That tells me that this Air Raid offense right now is not where it needs to be. And we've seen this from Washington State over the years. They're better as the year goes on. We saw it last year. They lose to Eastern Washington in the first game out of the chute, and everybody wrote them off. And then they come back and cover the next four, and they made money for their clients the rest of the season. So I don't think Washington State, I want to buy on them right now. But because, as you mentioned, with the Oregon State, without the defensive players and that against this, it's not the great matchup there. But, you know, you go back and take a look at what Oregon State has done, if I can find them in my workbook here. This has been a team that hasn't been overly impressive, but they're not a team that I think is really down. I mean, they played Colorado State and they played Minnesota. Now, they did lose that game last week 48-14 on Minnesota, but 58-27 against Colorado State. But when you take a look at the first half numbers in the first game against Colorado State, they actually outgained Colorado State by 0.8 yards per play. They allowed Colorado State to get the ball on their 10-yard line in that first half, and so they had a real short field, and they actually outgained Colorado State 24-20 against Minnesota. They were outgained 7.0-5.1, so they were pushed around a little bit there, but they were only outgained in the first half 20-14. So if I was to look to play this game, instead of maybe playing the Oregon State plus the 21.5 in the game or whatever it is now, maybe I will take a piece of Oregon State in that first half before the defensive backs get worn out in the game. They replace some defensive backs. And as the game goes on, as we said before, the team that can dictate the pace, the team that's the better team, will have the advantage. So we're looking at the smaller sample size of the first half with a team who has actually played pretty well in the first half. Their game's only losing by 4-6 against Colorado State and Minnesota. So different ways to look at each game. And I still think that the Washington State line's too high here, but the safer play may be to play the first half with Oregon State as Washington State continues to try to get that offense up to gear.
I think there's just so much intrigue about this game because let's look at the catalyst here for, you know, what happened with this Washington State comeback. It was still a 31-17 game with about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and Washington State gets a pick six. And as we know, pick sixes are huge momentum shifts. Boise State didn't have Brett Rippon. You know, Montel Cozart, a transfer from Kansas, throws a pick six. That's a concern. You know, your backup quarterback comes out there. You try and just sort of get him through this game. And Washington State gets that defensive touchdown. And, of course, you know that they're going to find a way to take advantage of a short field there late to tie this one. What is this line if Washington State doesn't complete that comeback? You know, I mean, do we actually see this number shoot all the way up to 21? It may open in the same spot. But because Washington State won that game last week, everyone goes, they scored 47 points on Boise State. That's cool. And because Oregon State, you know, got blown out in the second half by Colorado State, didn't play well against Portland State, got blown out by Minnesota, everyone just writes the Beavers off as saying, well, they're not a good team. And then this is what you get. You get an avalanche of money that drives this line away from, you know, wide open, which is realistically where it should have been.
You made another point that I forgot to mention is the overtime game. A team that wins in overtime is not as strong of a play the next week as a team that loses in overtime. The team that wins in overtime, sure, they're happy they've won the game. But as Boise State is a team that is upset because they've lost in overtime and they've got that quick turnaround against New Mexico on Thursday. So they don't have time to dwell on the loss. They've got to prepare for New Mexico in that game on Thursday. So you've got a team in Washington State, they survived and move on. And so even though the coach will be on them saying that they should have won by more and they didn't play well, they see in their mind that they won the game, and so what's the big deal? And that's one of the things when you've got young players that are that way. They're able to win those games, and they don't think that is a loss. You know, they think, well, maybe we didn't play as well as we should. We'll play a little bit better next week. But, hey, we got the win. And when you come off of those overtime wins, especially a game like that where they had that big comeback to come into that next game, they're still celebrating the win from last week whereas opposed to taking a look at Oregon State. They know what the lines are in these games. They see that they're a big, big favorite, Oregon State. I could definitely see them taking it easy on Oregon State in practice this week and not being fully prepared because of that, because they did get the win, as opposed to losing that game where you know they come fully focused to practice.
All right, let's go over to the professionals here, talk NFL, talk week one to week two overreactions. There are clearly some of those out in the market because everybody watches the NFL. You know, I mean, everybody, I know ratings are down a little bit and attendance is down a little bit, but let's be honest here. Everybody watches the NFL, and there are a lot fewer games to pay attention to than each week in college football. So overreactions here this week. Are there some that stand out to you, Brian?
Well, we'll start with that first game on Thursday, Houston and Cincinnati. Now, I know based on the NFL, when they play these early games on Thursday, the home team does have a definite advantage here. You got two teams that looked terrible last week, but keep in mind, Cincinnati played a Baltimore team who could have a legendary defense. This defense from Baltimore could be the best we've seen in years. They shut out Cincinnati in that game. I look to play a lot of Baltimore games under because I don't think their offense is very good, and they will just let the defense dictate the pace of the game. You got a Houston team I was very disappointed with last week. I had Jacksonville all along. I thought it was a great spot for Jacksonville, a great situation for Jacksonville. But Houston coming back home after the hurricane. Now, we remember, at least I remember, when New Orleans had Katrina, when – players on the teams are shot and killed. The Connecticut guy a few years ago was shot and killed, one of the popular players on the team. The team rallies around the community. They rally around that team. And Houston did nothing in that game last week. And now they've got a rookie quarterback playing on the road on the Thursday. Lined up at 3.5, has now gone to 6.5. Don't know if I could play Cincinnati at this point, because if it was played on a Sunday, I would probably be on Houston in this game, but because the home teams have such an advantage on Thursday with that travel day being such a distraction early in the week, I could see the Cincinnati line come in. But I think at this point, you can't get any more value with Cincinnati at 6.5. I wouldn't want any part of them.
I think there are a couple of games where we see some overreactions, and I'm going to move to 281, 282 on the board here, Washington and the Los Angeles Rams. Rams are up to a 3-point favorite at Pinnacle. This number opened 2 at Bookmaker. It's now up to 3. It's 2.5 with extra juice pretty much everywhere else in the market. This feels like one of those spots. You know, the Redskins did not play well against Philadelphia last week. Big-time division game for them. Didn't look good. New offensive coordinator, they had some problems. But we're still talking about the Los Angeles Rams. I know Sean McVay looked really good in his debut. I know he's very familiar with the Redskins personnel, which is maybe driving this line a little bit. Long travel cross country for Washington, but still, I feel like prior to week one, this game's probably a pick 'em, maybe Washington -1 on the opening number, but it certainly looks a lot different now given what happened in week one with the two teams.
Yeah, it definitely does. And the only thing that concerns me is Kirk Cousins. If you break down his home and away stats since he's been at Washington, he's so much better at home than he is on the road. The Rams last week, when that line came out after the quarterback adjustment, it was a steal for the Rams based on – when it came out, it was like 3, 3.5, which basically told you these teams were equal without Andrew Luck being on the field, which was totally bold. Andrew Luck has probably got the biggest drop of anybody, and that includes Tom Brady in the NFL, maybe Aaron Rodgers. It's probably got to be at least 8 points, and – based on what happened last week, it may even be higher. So now he's the quarterback for Indy. He's got a game under his belt. He knows a little bit more what to expect a little bit. I think that game has probably gone a little bit too far. But yeah, the Rams are a good team. I think the Rams are a play-on team for the season. But at this point, anything more than 3, I wouldn't want to lay with the Rams.
No, I certainly think that that's definitely the case. What about the Kansas City Chiefs here? You know, this number 4.5 or 5, Philadelphia, you know, with that pretty good performance last week, it was kind of an inconsistent performance. They had some issues here and there throughout that game, you know, but did wind up playing pretty well overall, got the win. This is a fascinating game to me because you've got Doug Peterson, you've got Andy Reid, two guys that are very, very, very familiar with each other. Kansas City coming off of that blowout win over New England that everybody watched. It was the start of the NFL season. People were happy to get the NFL back. They paid attention to that one. It feels to me like there's value on Philadelphia here in this spot.
I think there is, too. I'm kind of hoping it gets up to a six here and I'll be able to take them. But you do have to keep in mind that Philadelphia is coming off of a divisional game, and those are more important. I know Kansas City played New England, and that's obviously an important game to anybody who plays New England. But they did play on Thursday, so they've got more time to prepare for Philadelphia. Usually when you're playing these non-conference games, they take a lesser importance. Obviously, your in-division games take number one, conference number two, non-conference number three, which is why normally when you play these non-conference games, the totals become a little bit higher because the teams just don't prepare as much defensively because they don't see these offenses except for once out of every 3 or 4 years. So we're looking at, again, 47.5 here. Kansas City's basically 5 right now. But, yeah, I think there is value on Philadelphia here. I think Philadelphia is one of those teams. And I talked about this at the Tuesday meeting, and there was enough guys that talked me out of my bet on Washington that it saved me a bet, which is one of the reasons why I do like that. I'd like to play on Washington at home because of Kirk Cousins as well as he does there. But Philadelphia's defense is looking very good, and they now have some people that can stretch the field offensively. So it wouldn't surprise me if Philadelphia is a playoff team, just as Kansas City should be a playoff team. They may both end up being the wild cards, but you've got two teams that, to me, are pretty equal, and you've got a game at 5. I prefer 6, but if it stays 5, I'll probably still end up on Philadelphia. I think that's the right side in this game at this point.
Something I want to look at, looking back to week 1 here, the Arizona Cardinals took on money pretty much all summer long. We talked about them a little bit on the show. There was season total investment on them. There was Super Bowl investment on them. Division futures, obviously, there in the NFC West. And they didn't play very well. Wind up losing to the Detroit Lions. The other team that sort of fell into a similar boat last week was the Tennessee Titans. People looking to fade the Oakland Raiders, looking to fade the fact that the Raiders were a bit of a paper tiger at 12-4 last year, got outgained, I think, in, what, about 10 of their 16 games, something like that. Didn't look the part of a 12-4 team. So the market looking to go against them early on, both of those teams lost, Arizona and Tennessee. Coincidentally, both of them taking on money here this week, Tennessee up to a 2.5-point favorite against Jacksonville after opening Pick'em. Arizona has crossed 7. They're 7.5 at most of the sharper offshores for their game against Indianapolis. Is this the right course of action, or does last week show us that maybe going contrarian is the way to go?
I don't want Indy. I think there's value on Indy. I just don't want them without Andrew Luck. I just think the drop-off is too far. Arizona is one of the teams that I look to back, but I don't want to back them at this number. Keep in mind, in the first half last week against Detroit had two drives starting at the Arizona 42 and 38, and they only managed 9 points in that first half of that game. So until Arizona had to start going out of their game plan when they fell behind in the game in the second half, the game was pretty even. Detroit's much better at home than they've been on the road. Arizona just has to protect the quarterback, and they didn't get it done last week. And, you know, in the first half, they only averaged 3.6 yards per play. Can't get it done against the Detroit defense, so it isn't really that great. At this point, I don't want any part of both these teams, and I'm just going to sit back and watch and see what happens. But I think it's more of a play against Indy than it is a play on Arizona.
What about the fact that David Johnson's out? Does that make an adjustment in your power ratings for Arizona? I mean, is that something that could, you know, potentially throw you in a direction where at some point you decide, okay, maybe I'll try Indianapolis first half or something like that? What sort of adjustment did you make for David Johnson?
Yeah, to me, he's the second best running back in the NFC, and which means probably a 1.5 point adjustment. If they can't throw the ball downfield, he's the workhorse back there, and if he's not there, that's definitely going to hurt them. The better way to play may be to play the under here because Arizona doesn't have confidence in their passing game. They think that if they just run the ball up the gut, they'll be able to beat Indianapolis. If I'm Indianapolis, I don't want to be put in a position where I got to pass the ball. Maybe first half under would probably be the better play out of anything we've discussed.
All right, a couple of games I want to mention here specifically. One where I don't get the line move at all. 275, 276 on the board. Chicago and Tampa Bay. Chicago looked great last week against Atlanta. I know Atlanta has some issues. They've got two new coordinators, so it may take them a little bit of time to figure everything out. But Chicago looked pretty good. They looked pretty good defensively, save for that one blown coverage on the 88-yard touchdown scamper for Austin Hooper. But the Bears looked vastly improved. And here they take on a Tampa Bay team that didn't get to play in week one because the game was postponed due to the hurricane. All of a sudden, Tampa Bay is a touchdown favorite, and this is one of those where I'm trying to figure out why the line is moving that way.
Yeah, this one is kind of interesting. I thought there was a value on Chicago also. The line continues to go in that 7 range, so I'm not in a hurry to grab a 7 if I could possibly get a 7.5. But you've got a Tampa Bay team. You can look at it two ways. Number one, they had extra time to prepare. Number two, they don't have a game under their belt yet, and they always say, your biggest change is between game one and game two after you've been able to make adjustments. And in the preseason, the starters played very little, and because of the weather, Tampa didn't play last week. Tampa was a team coming into the season. A lot of people are high on. I'm not as high on Tampa as they are, so it could be the guys that just thought that they were Tampa was a team they wanted to back. You know, Chicago to me looks like the right side here. With that extra game behind them. And, yeah, I agree. In that game against Atlanta last week, the only thing that concerns me is against that Atlanta defense, which has had some problems. They only had one explosive play in that entire game. So I don't know if the Bears are going to put many points on the board, but I think their defense should be able to keep this one close with Tampa Bay. Not a Tampa Bay buyer. If this gets a 7.5, I'll definitely be on the Bears.
Well, then we have another game that sort of falls under that same umbrella. Miami's out on the road against the Los Angeles Chargers. This is the home opener for the Chargers in L.A., at least the regular season home opener. Miami, of course, couldn't play last week due to the hurricane. They were supposed to play Tampa Bay. They didn't. Very strange week for Miami. And one of the things I do talk about a lot, I talk about this with baseball. I talk about it from a situational standpoint in the NBA and the NHL, is that these guys are professional athletes. You know, they have a system. They have a routine. They try to do the same thing day in and day out. For the Miami Dolphins, their routine is completely screwed up. You know, they've been practicing in different places. They've been out on the West Coast for a while here now. It's just a weird situation for them. They're getting 4.5 or 5 against the Chargers team that lost a tough divisional game on Monday Night Football in Denver, so a short prep week for the Chargers with a new head coach. There's a ton to break down about this game. Do you just simply stay away from it, or do you feel like you've got edges one way or another?
Well, I try to break it down just like any game, and those other intangibles are part of what you put in. You got the Chargers coming off a divisional game on Monday Night Football, a game where they had that nice comeback in the second. I couldn't understand why the Chargers weren't passing in the first half. It looked like they were just trying to rely completely on the running game. And they had that game go down to the wire, heartbreaking loss, but they were behind, you know, for the full game. Against the Miami team, as you said, they don't have a game under their belt yet. They've had to travel all over the country just to get away from the hurricane. I like both these teams. I think they're both better than what the general public thinks. So I'm looking to back Miami and Chicago at certain spots this year. I just don't know what to make of this one here. To be honest with you, if it was 6, I'd take Miami. If it was 3, I'd take the Chargers. So with it sitting at 4.5 tells me this is a game I'm just going to sit and watch.
Where do you think this number goes? I mean, it's kind of sitting there in that dead zone between 4 and 6. So some group somewhere is going to push this thing around. Do you think Miami is the preferred side, or do you think this number goes up?
To be honest with you, I don't know. I think there's too many questions to be confident on either side of this game, at least in my regard. I'm sure somebody may find some value, but with it sitting 4.5, if you wanted Miami, you would take the 4.5 because I doubt if it gets to 6. If you're at the Chargers, you don't want to lay 4.5 when you can lay 4. So there's nobody in a hurry to lay 4.5 with the Chargers. So if it moves at all, it'll move down to 4 before it'll move up 5, 5.5, or I won't say meaningless, but they don't happen very often. A team wins by 5, 5.5 points. So I could see a slight move down to four, but I think it probably ends up exactly where it is right now.
Well, Brian, we covered a ton of stuff here on today's show. I know I kept you a little long, so I do apologize for that. But what's going on over at wagertalk.com right now?
Well, we always do the videos, and I'll be putting up some plays. I've got a head start on this week's action since we've got a lot more stats to go over, and I've got everything done on that, so I'll be able to put my plays up in early. I may actually have a play on that Thursday game. But, yeah, I'll have my entire packages up for this weekend. And then, of course, we still got baseball going on. And being Cleveland Indians fans, we're still excited about the baseball season and can't wait to see if we break the record.
Well, you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Sounds great. Take care.
Well, good segment there. I know we had a lot of different things to cover, a lot of different betting angles here in college football and the NFL for this week. And, you know, look, it's I understand that it can be hard for some of our listeners out there who are probably newer, you know, to this industry to wrap their heads around taking bad teams, at least teams that have played bad so far, like Baylor, like BYU, like Pitt. But again, you're looking for value in the number. You're looking for outliers. You're looking for overreactions that are out there that shouldn't be out there. And those are three of those games in college football, and then we will get some in the NFL. We'll talk some more NFL tomorrow with Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels. But you're going to find these spots early on in the season. The markets are still inefficient, and they have to be a little bit more reactionary than we do as handicappers because they don't want to get too exposed on one side or the other of a game. You know, we can sit here, we can be a little bit more patient, or we can be a little more aggressive if we want to, you know, based on what fits our narrative, what fits some of the positions that we've had at the start of the season, and then also some of the positions that we have now. So that's where we get the edges over the sports books. You want to zig when they zag, so to speak, and there are some games out there that sort of fall under that umbrella. So I got a few minutes left here, and at Brash Lindbergh on Twitter, you know, I was talking about how we had that discussion about, you know, high variance or low variance games based on totals and the sizes of spreads. And I've had some really good power ratings discussions with him off the air. And I decided that I wanted to spend a couple of minutes here on today's show while I had this platform because it's my show, damn it, and I'm going to do it. But I want to talk a little bit about power ratings. And, you know, we talk about them a lot here on this show. And I think that maybe I've misled the listeners a little bit in terms of thinking that's the only deciding factor for a game. It's not. What a lot of handicappers will tell you and what I'm going to tell you here is that the power ratings are a guide for you, you know, because early on in the week, you just want to grab numbers. You want to get out in front of the market. You want to see if you can get, you know, like I talked about, for example, with that Baylor game, I got a bad number on that Baylor game. I thought that the number should be below a touchdown. I saw 9.5 come out. I thought, okay, I'm going to take this because I think this number closes a touchdown. Obviously, I was wrong. And you're going to be wrong from time to time. That is something that's going to happen. You know, on the other hand, I'm sitting on Miami of Ohio as a pick'em against Cincinnati, and that's a number that did move in my favor. It's now 5.5 out there in the market. So that was one that I was right on. But this is how power ratings are used. You want to use them as a guide to isolate games that you're going to be interested in, where you think you're going to have line value, and to get out in front of the market and get that line value. As you start to break down the game a little bit more, as you start to look at situational angles, travel spots, injuries, matchup analysis, things of that sort, you can play back on some of these games. If I wanted to, I could take Cincinnati plus 5.5, have the key numbers of 3 and 4 in there, and set myself up with the opportunity for a middle. Or I can sit there and just be happy with my closing line value, let Miami ride, and see how it goes with them as a pick'em. That's what you try to do with power ratings. That's how you want to utilize them, how you want to approach the betting market with regards to power ratings. They are a guide. They are a way to get out in front of the market. They are a way to try and project line moves. As you get deeper into the week, as you gather more information, as you gather more research, as you look at the injury situations for these teams, then you start to figure some things out. You know, Brian had a perfect example there that Cheetah relayed to him regarding Oregon State and Washington State. Now, if your number on that game was 17 or 20, something like that, you look at that matchup and you say to yourself when that number opens 15.5, okay, no one's going to back Oregon State. Washington State will be the public side, so I'm going to get out in front of this line move. I'm going to take the 15.5, Do I have a strong position on it? No, I don't. But from a line value standpoint, there's value in the number to me. So if you're sitting there with a 15.5 and this number gets to 21.5, you know, if your number is like Oregon State, you can play back at it. But again, you want to set yourself up to get that line value early in the week, and that's what power ratings can do. That's the approach that I take with them and the approach that I think a lot of professional handicappers take with them. They are not gospel. They are not the be-all, end-all when it comes to looking at the college football card. You know, well, you'll hear guys on the show talk about a power ratings play based on this, but they'll have different angles for games that they play later on in the week. You know, maybe, for example, Purdue and Missouri. You know, let's just use that game as an example here. I know that a very, very sharp guy out there whose opinion I respect quite highly took Missouri -7 on the opener. The number is sitting at 7.5 now. Purdue money will probably come in on this game, at least from the public that gets involved, and we'll see what the sharp side decides to be. But he thought that there was value in grabbing the 7 number. Maybe he's got this number 10. Maybe he's got an 11, 12. I don't know what his specific power rating number is, but he felt that there was value in grabbing the 7. Well, on Tuesday, Missouri fires its defensive coordinator, Damani Cross. So then you start looking at this game and you say, okay, what's going to happen to the Missouri defense, which isn't good to begin with? You know, do I want to buy out of this game? Do I want to wait and see if Missouri money comes in? What do I want to do? So you make a numbers grab early in the week, but then things are going to happen. Missouri fires a defensive coordinator. That's not good. Do you take Purdue? Do you break down the matchup a little bit more? Look at how Missouri's defense has fared in some of its games this season and say, okay, Purdue's going to move the football here. I'm going to buy out of this one. Or if you've got a middle opportunity, I'm going to take my middle opportunity. Those are the decisions that you're faced or that you face later on in the week as you gather more information, as injury situations become clearer. You know, all of this stuff is very, very important for a variety of different reasons. You know, everything is just information is power. And when you've got power ratings, you know, you have a certain thing where you're looking at these games and you say, okay, there's line value on this one. But as you go throughout the week, maybe it's not necessarily there. Let's take a look at another example here that I can use from Friday's game, Arizona and UTEP. Now, the market went out there and grabbed Arizona -21 early on in the week. Well, UTEP's starting quarterback, Ryan Metz, is out for this game and out for the next several games, actually. UTEP is relying on a freshman running back. They don't have a whole lot of experience with their backup quarterbacks. So if you paid attention to that on Saturday, saw that UTEP's quarterback went down, if you had line value on Arizona in your power ratings, you went ahead and took the 21. Now you got a couple of points of line value. Does from 21 to 22.5 mean anything? No, probably not. Not necessarily. But everything is mathematical in this industry as well. So you have a certain implied probability based on the spread, based on the money line. If you can get out in front of those, that is helpful for you. So that's what I wanted to get across here on today's show is that all of our handicappers talk about having power ratings, and maybe the process is difficult for our listeners. Maybe it's something that can be a little bit challenging to set those up. And like I talked about, mine still aren't great, and I know that. I'm happy with where they are in terms of week three. I'm happy with where they are in terms of how many years I've done power ratings. But I sometimes get caught with my pants down with a spot like I did with Baylor. But also, I'll have a spot like I did with Miami of Ohio. So, you know, they're important. They're a great guide. But again, you have different considerations in all of these games. You have to have a broad perspective on why you want to play a game. You know, let's look at Iowa State and Akron, for example, a game that we touched on Monday's show with Kyle Hunter. Iowa State's coming off of a massive letdown spot, losing the rivalry game to Iowa in overtime. From a numbers standpoint, I had value on Iowa State because I knew that there was that situation. But the numbers guys out there are going to grab it and then worry about playing back at it later. These things are very important. If you want to take this seriously, you want to be able to find a way to get out in front of the market early in the week and then decide if that's a position that you want to keep later in the week. And that's something that professionals can do because the limits are smaller. You know, Cheetah talked about it. The limits at the win are $2,000. When you get deeper into the week, you can play 5, 10, 15, 20K on a game. Now, Cheetah's not out there rolling 20K on all of his sides or anything like that, but that's what some guys with deep pockets can do. They'll grab a number with a $2,000 limit or a $2,500 limit, and then buy out of it later in the week for $5,000 or $10,000, because they found something in breaking the game down more, you know, that they had the opportunity to do. The importance of power ratings early on in the week is that these numbers move very, 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 very quickly, extremely quickly. So you play just based on your numbers. It may not be a true position, but you're going to grab the number. You're going to grab the line value in a number. Later on in the week, there's more money on these games. It's more of a true market setup. So at that point, you decide what you want to do. And for a lot of our listeners out there, they're not grabbing openers. And I totally understand that. I totally get that, and I fully respect that. And that's why I wanted to sit here and talk about this here on today's show. There's a lot more to handicapping college football and handicapping any other sport than power ratings. So we talk about them on the show. We talk about grabbing the line value, but the X's and O's matter. The matchups matter. The situational spots, the coaching edges, these things all matter. So early in the week, you see these positions. You see these numbers grabs. Later in the week, you see more handicapping. You see more, okay, this quarterback will probably struggle against this defense. This running back's not going to find holes. This offensive line is playing really badly. Those are the things that you see later on in the week. So it's a package deal. And if you're missing the front part of that package, if you don't do power ratings, if you're not grabbing openers, that's okay. I just didn't want to give off the impression that I was saying that power ratings mean everything, that they're the be-all, end-all, like I said. There's so much more that goes into it than that. The power ratings are a great guide early in the week to pick off numbers, to project line moves. But overall, you know, once you get deeper into the week, your power ratings don't mean as much, because then you have to start looking at the other elements of the game. You know, the value has probably been extracted from your power ratings by the time you get later in the week and start breaking down the games. So I just wanted to make sure I touched on that here on today's show and let our listeners know that, you know, not to be discouraged if they don't have power ratings. There are still opportunities to make money out there betting college football, even if you don't use a power rating setup. You just want to know the teams, the personnel, the matchups, all of that stuff is critically important. It's all a part of the total package, all a part of the handicapping and the betting process. So again, if you missed an opener early on in the week, let's say you missed Western Michigan at 17, where they're now 20.5. There may still be value in that game. You know, Western Michigan runs the ball very effectively. Idaho probably doesn't stop the run. You know, most Sun Belt teams don't stop the run all that well. So that's a spot where just because you missed 17 doesn't mean there's no value in 20.5. So again, I just wanted to make sure that our listeners were aware of that, that yes, power ratings are important, but they're not gospel. They're not always right. The market hitting these numbers early on in the week isn't always right. Sometimes a number moves in a certain direction and the team that got steamed gets blown out. Middle Tennessee Vanderbilt week one is another one of those examples. Market was on Middle Tennessee throughout the week. They got dominated. So the numbers grab, the market moves, not always the correct position. But if you're interested in grabbing line value, if you're interested in getting out in front of the numbers, it's something you have to do. If that's not as important to you or you feel like it's something you can't do, you can't dedicate the time to on Sundays, that's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. When you think about, and this is something that Ralph Michaels has talked about, this is something that Brad Powers has talked about as well. Handicappers will tell you you get the best of the number. One or two guys generally get the best of the number. You know, I got fortunate with that Miami of Ohio game at Pick'em. There are not a whole lot of people that have Miami of Ohio at a pick'em in that game. And does that make me sharp? Does that make me great? No, not necessarily. I just saw the ability to grab a number. Miami of Ohio might lose. Then the spread doesn't even matter. The fact they're a 5.5-point favorite, the fact that I got 5.5 points of line value, doesn't even matter because they lost. So, again, power ratings are important, but I don't want our listeners to get discouraged. I don't want to give off the wrong impression that, you know, they're this critically important must-have kind of thing. You know, because if you're not out there grabbing openers, if you don't have the ability to do that, then they're not as important to you as they are to other people. Then you start looking at the X's and O's. You start breaking down the game for what it's worth. You know, you start looking at where the market is still coming in with the higher limits. You know, isolate where some of the bigger groups have come in on games. You're just looking to gather information. That's all that you try to do throughout the week. And whether you bet on Sunday with openers, on Tuesday to try to get out in front of the syndicates, or on Saturday mornings before the games kick off, as long as you're educated and informed, those are wagers that you can live with, even if they don't win. That's all you want to do. You try to give yourself as much of an edge as possible and look to take advantage of that. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com and Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join us. Friday, Westgate Super Contest selection segment, an ugly 1-4 week with the Bang the Book podcast entry. We were not alone. The recap is up at BangTheBook.com. Less than 40% winners in the Super Contest this week. So we were definitely not alone. Not that it makes us feel any better about it, but it was a tough week in the NFL for a lot of people. Try to bounce back here this week with that Super Contest segment on Friday. Then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.